You've tuned into the 8 o'clock Buzz. I'm Jan Miyasaki, and this morning on the Buzz, I'll be speaking with John Miller. John Miller is a professor of economics at Wheaton College in Norton, Massachusetts. He's a longtime contributor to Dollars and Cents magazine, where you can read his column, Up Against the Wall Street Journal. And John Miller is the co-author with Arthur McEwen of Economic Change, Economic Collapse. John Miller has said the tax burden of the wealthy, what they pay out in federal, state, and local taxes relative to their income has plummeted over the last 70 years. In 1950, the wealthiest 400 families paid out 70% of their income in taxes, 47% in 1980, and just 23% in 2018. And systematically slashing the tax burden on the super rich has not delivered the promised faster economic growth. So stay tuned to hear from John Miller. We'll be talking about the optimal tax and the wealth tax. And are these, you know, leftist, far-left radical proposals, as Democrats now are beginning to adopt the Republican playbook against these proposals? Joining me by phone is John Miller. John Miller is a professor of economics at Wheaton College in Norton, Massachusetts. He's a longtime contributor to Dollars and Cents magazine, where you can read his column, Up Against the Wall Street Journal. And he's co-author with Arthur McEwen of Economic Change and Economic Collapse. The tax burden on the wealthy has decreased. And systematically slashing the tax burden on the super rich has not delivered promised faster economic growth. In fact, the economy has grown more slowly than during any of the five decades from 1950 to 2000. Inequality has soared, and the economy has become less able to improve the lot of most people. So I'm glad to have John Miller back to talk about, I think, two important concepts and taxes we hear in the news. Last time we had John on, we talked about the optimal tax. We want to come back to that. The optimal tax, if implemented, could, you know, fund the entire Green New Deal. I also want to talk about the wealth tax, which could, without reprioritizing other types of spending, could fund the Medicare for All. Are these really leftist, radical proposals? Are they too far left? Are Democrats, you know, they're beginning to adopt the Republican playbook against these proposals? So I really wanted to talk with John Miller about this. So good morning, John. Thanks for joining me again.
Thanks, Jan. And you summed it up really well. I don't know if you need me on this call.
No, the optimal tax first. Let's go back to that. It is something embraced by moderate or just your mainstream economists, I guess, right?
So it's something that came out of economics starting in the 60s and 70s. There was a famous advisor to the Johnson administration named Arthur Oaken that was a sort of dye-in-the-wool liberal economist who always saw himself as pursuing efficiency and equity at the same time. But he worried that if you redistributed too much income, that would dull efficiency and slow economic growth. So what mainstream economists then did, that spawned the literature which just said, well, how high could taxes go before it really started to slow economic growth by dulling the incentive of the rich to work and invest? And the findings of it were surprising. They found that these economists, including a Nobel Prize-winning economist named Diamond, who worked with Emmanuel Saez on some of the inequality literature that you were talking about, found that it could be as high as 73%, and that would be the marginal tax rate, the tax rate on the next dollar, the top tax bracket that would pull in the maximum amount of revenue for the government. So the long and the short of it is that you could have tax rates be much higher for the income tax than the current 37% top bracket, probably as high as 73%, and it wouldn't dull growth to the point where the government no longer collected more revenues. Or the response of the rich to higher taxes is rather modest. And that means there's a lot more that you could do to collect revenues that could address all the kinds of problems that you enumerated when you so ably introduced me.
So the what tax level of wealth would be? Are we talking about on the next dollar above how much income?
Well, that it would be above. Well, what we know from the Eisenhower administration is we had the fastest economic growth of any decade in the last 70 years, and the top tax bracket was 91%, and it was leveled at income over $200,000 in the 50s, which is the equivalent of about 1.2 million, or a little less than $1.2 million now. So probably it could work as a top tax bracket that was began just over $1 million. Now, the AOC proposal is not for 73 top income tax bracket, but for 70%, and it would kick in at $10 million. So when I wrote the article about the optimal tax, and look, that there's a lot of mainstream support for a tax that's at that level, I concluded she's actually leaving money on the table, because the Eisenhower tax was yet higher, the optimal tax rate is yet higher, and it started at, you know, less than a couple of $1 million instead of at $10 million.
So that it isn't unheard of. It's not implausible.
No.
It's not overly radical.
No, it's progressive, and the definition of a progressive tax is one that takes a higher percentage of income from the well-to-do than from middle-income and poor people, with the kind of understanding that the a richer person needs an additional dollar of income less so than a middle-income person or a poor person. And, you know, the United States was actually a trailblazer in imposing progressive taxation. You know, the Eisenhower years, before we go too crazy with that, you know, those tax rates were littered with loopholes. So the rich didn't pay that much of their income, but they paid considerably more than they did today in total taxes, more like about 60-70% in federal, state, and local taxes, with a top income tax bracket of 91%. But today's tax code is littered with loopholes too. So what AOC is proposing is not an alteration of the base or what gets taxed with the income tax, but just an adjustment of the rates. And I'm sure she would favor closing loopholes and things like that as well. But that's not what's in her Green New Deal proposal.
So every dollar over $10 million would be taxed 70 cents. Is that how that?
Yeah. Yeah. That once you had $10 million, the next dollar you'd get to take home 30 cents. Of course, what you do with the additional 30 cents if you've already got $10 million coming in every year? I don't know. I don't think I'll ever face that problem to figure it out.
Well, and this idea that slashing taxes would deliver faster economic growth doesn't pan out. And what economics tells us that is that this level of taxation, you said, does not dull the incentive to work or to invest, because at that level, that 30 cents, you can still invest a lot of money.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you still have a lot of money. Yeah, I think it's too strong to say it doesn't dull, but it dulls it in a very modest way. And the economic evidence is really clear about that. If you wanted to talk about why, I mean, we could look at sort of why the tax cut, the Trump tax cut didn't work.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look. So the Trump tax cut, probably its biggest element was lowering the rate of taxes that corporations pay nominally. I mean, they all pay less than what the legal rate is, with using loopholes to get around it. But it lowered the rate from 35% to 20%. So that's slashing it, you know, by about 40%. And all of that goes to the owners of corporations, and we know that holding stock wealth is really concentrated at the top. So this is you know, a tax giveaway for the rich. It freed up about $94 million of corporate tax. Let me make sure I've got the number right. That it freed up something like $94 billion in tax in property. Yeah, it's $94 billion, not million. $94 billion that was freed up that they promised would go to investment, and that investment would create jobs and lift wages. Now, we know we haven't seen an increase in wages that to speak of, so that hasn't come true. But the other thing that happened, there was a couple of initial surges in investment that had much more to do with oil prices than anything to do with the tax cut. And investment in plant and equipment, the kind of investment that makes the economy grow, was slower after the tax cut than it was from 2010 to 2016 in the Obama years, and it's actually declining now. And all of the money, they also gave a discount on corporate profits that were repatriated from abroad, money that they had stashed overseas. And that money came in, but none of it, or hardly any of it, went to investment. It all went to corporations buying back their own stock.
Yes.
Stock buybacks reached $1 trillion for the first time in 2018. So what it amounted to was a giveaway to the rich, a giveaway to corporations, increased the amount of profits that corporations could take by just short of $100 billion, and got us no better investment performance than what we had seen in the beginnings of the economic expansion under the Obama administration, and dramatically increased inequality. So, and even when the International Monetary Fund researchers looked at the data, they said, well, what you did see for an increase in investment, it was due mostly to consumers spending more money and the government spending more money, and not due to the tax cut. So that really makes the case that, look, putting in place an optimal or more optimal tax like the AOC proposal, and using that money for investments into the economy like those that would get us, you know, a much more efficient electrical grid, re-outfit buildings, and all the kinds of things you think of with the Green New Deal, would do much more to support economic growth, would create more jobs, spread its income more widely than the really lopsided effects of the Trump tax cut.
Yes. So that gets us to the wealth tax. So what is the wealth tax?
It's a tax on wealth. So the difference between wealth and income, wealth is how much you own at the end of the year, and income is how much comes into your household during the year. The two proposals out there are the Warren and Sanders proposals, and the Sanders proposal would tax wealth over $32 million at 1%, and then wealth over $50 million at 2%, and then wealth over $10 billion ultimately at 8%. And the Warren proposal starts at $50 million at 2%. It was initially going to be at maximum 3% at a billion, But after she put out the plan to finance her Medicaid for All proposal, she moved it up to 6% to be able to do that. Now, the rationale for a wealth tax is that what you recited at the beginning of our discussion was tremendous income inequality. The top 1% now has a bigger share of income than the bottom 50%. But wealth inequality is about 10 times more equal. The top 0.1%, each of whom have at least $20 million in wealth, have more wealth than the bottom 80% of the population. That's, And the other trend that we've seen that fits into our discussion of the optimal tax is that the super wealthy have been paying less and less of their income, or smaller and smaller share of their income, in taxes. In their latest book, Syed and Zuckman, the sort of best-known inequality researchers in the United States, found that in 2018, the richest 400 families or taxpayers pay 23% of their total income in state, local, and federal taxes combined. The bottom 50% of the population pay 24.3%. And from that, and that's where their title comes from, The Triumph of Injustice, of the title of their book. And it's, we're at a point today where the ultra-billionaires, ultra-millionaires, pay a smaller percentage of their taxes than, as Syed and Zuckman put it, the middle class and the working class.
So is this, the wealth tax, is that, and this concern about dulling incentives to work and to invest, which is what, you know, mainstream economists are looking to minimize that. Is a wealth tax something that we should be skeptical about? What's its projected impact on the economy? And there's a lot of good, I would imagine.
Well, it depends what you use the money for. Yeah. And I think we've seen a lot of nice proposals about education, about health care, investments in our infrastructure coming out of both the Sanders and Warren campaign. And those expenditures, even in traditional economic research, particularly public investments, which are at much lower than they were 3, 4, 5 decades ago, have more bang for the buck for increasing economic growth than even private investment. But maybe the right way to think about it is when Paul Krugman wrote a little bit about the wealth tax. He hasn't written a full column on the wealth tax. He ended by saying, look, this tax raises revenues directly from people who are more or less literally have more money than they know what to do with. And we know from the levels of investment, as one Wall Street columnist, to paraphrase him and turn his words against him, he said, well, look, I know the left just thinks they're sitting on all these Benjamins. Well, they might not be just sitting on their Benjamins, but they're not investing them like they did before, as we know from the Trump tax cut. So I think there's good reason to look at a wealth tax. It also gets at income that an income tax wouldn't. I mean, in 2015, if I remember the numbers right, according to the Forbes richest 400, the three richest people were Bezos from Amazon, Bill Gates from Microsoft, and Warren Buffett from Berkshire Hathaway, the famous investor. In 2015, they estimated that Warren Buffett had about $60 billion $1 billion in wealth. And that from that, economists figured out that he probably realizes about $60 million a year just in, you know, from the rate of growth of money that he's already invested. They figured he probably realized about $3 billion a year. In income taxes, the only income that he had to be taxed was the money he made from selling a bunch of shares of his company.
Yep.
That was about $10 million. Now, that would mean that he probably paid taxes of about $2 million on $60 billion of wealth. If you had imposed the Warren or Sanders tax, his wealth tax bill would have been about $4 billion under the Sanders proposal and about $3.5 billion under the Warren proposal. And I don't think Warren Buffett would even know the money is gone.
Yes. You know, I might have been the last one to get it, but now I get it, the difference between taxing income, which people try to minimize as much as possible, but their wealth is their wealth. And, you know, I was reading an article about this in the mainstream, or conservative, if you will, Forbes, and they were projecting what the wealth tax would have on somebody like Warren Buffett. And you're right, he would still be super ultra-rich billionaire.
Oh, no. This is not going to get rid of, I mean, it's a Sanders proposal, but it's not going to get rid of billionaires. It's going to make them pay a much higher portion, probably double the portion of their income, or triple at the most, the amount of income they pay in taxes. But again, at this date, by 2018 data, they're paying a smaller share of their income and taxes than the average person in the bottom half of the population with respect to income. So there's certainly, it needs to be done. Now, there's a lot of counterarguments, and it's that, you know, they look at the estate tax and people get around the estate tax and they say, well, the only difference is a wealth tax is an annual tax on wealth, while an estate tax is a tax on wealth when you die. Well, at this point, neither the Warren or Sanders proposal has the kind of loopholes that are available with the estate tax. And unlike the wealth taxes that were in Europe, many of which were repealed, it starts at a much higher level. And I think the other thing that's attractive about a wealth tax is it's pretty easy actually to understand. You got these ultra millionaires, you've got this extreme wealth, and this tax is targeted at people that have at least $32 million in wealth, and it doesn't tax anything under $32 million. It just taxes one penny out of every dollar that they earn, they have in wealth after that. And, you know, so that's, but in Europe, the taxes typically started at about $1 million of wealth. And somebody that, you know, has got a home in Boston that's worth, which can be worth a, you know, where I live, you know, you can have a home in Boston and lo and behold, it's worth $1 million. You don't even know how, other than there's such a shortage of housing. So you might end up paying some small amount in a wealth tax. Here, it only kicks in, it's at a high level, it's targeted at the super rich. It comes without the kind of loopholes that are already baked into an income tax. So I think it's more politically sellable. The economists sort of say, look, why don't you fix the estate tax? Why don't you fix the special loopholes for people that make investment income or capital gains instead of doing this? And that's a fine argument. It still wouldn't tax as much as a wealth tax, but it's also things that we've tried to do, and you know, if I had to sit down and tell people about the cap of 20% on capital gains income instead of 37% being the maximum on wage income, by the time I get done, it's a much harder story to tell.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with John Miller. He's a professor of economics at Wheaton College in Norton, Massachusetts, a longtime contributor to Dollars and Cents magazine. Look for his column Up Against the Wall Street Journal, and he's co-author of Economic Change and Economic Collapse. And John Miller, thank you for talking with me today. You know, people can disagree on this, but I'm really regretting the marginalization in the Democratic debate on the wealth tax. I think we should have an intelligent discussion about it, and you're really helpful. Economics in school always seemed like it was much more of a mystery, but you really simplify it. So thank you, John Miller. Thanks for, and we'll talk again before the election for sure.
Yeah, I'd love to. And listen, stay warm. We're shivering here at 20 degrees, but I suspect you think that's nothing.
I think it might be below that here, but not much. Stay warm too, and thanks for speaking with me this morning.
Oh, yeah, it was a real pleasure. Thanks, Jen.